This episode was originally released on November 15th, 2019. You might say we enjoy our books, and you'd be right. Hello, it's Drew from 99.3 Moose FM, West Nipissing's best music, and welcome to another edition of Fascinating People, where I go out into the community and try and find somebody with a story. It's quite easy because everybody has a story. You just have to find the people that are willing to tell it. Like Lise. But we're not getting an exclusive here. She has shared her story before. In fact, she shared it on her book, Conscious Caregiving Guide. It's part of the Wish I Knew series. We'll be going into that a little bit more in today's episode. Just wanted to remind you that if you want to be a guest on Fascinating People, or you know somebody who would make an interesting addition to our lineup, then send me an email, drew@moosefm.com. And now to discuss tips on caregiving, on how to deal with burnout, communication, and more. Here's Lise LeBlanc.
Hi, I'm Lise LeBlanc. I'm so happy to be here. Thank you for listening today.
Well, thank you for joining us today. So I usually start this off with a traditional question. Where are you from?
I'm from right here in Sturgeon Falls, born and raised.
Oh, really? Have you always lived here?
Yeah, I was born here and stayed in Sturgeon, grew up here, went away for some schooling in Ottawa and Sudbury, and then I came right back and raised my family.
What did you do for schooling?
I took psychology and law, and I'm a psychotherapist, a conflict resolution specialist, and now an author.
Oh, my. So, and that's been your career path? Since the beginning?
Yeah, most of my life. I've worked in mental health, children and adult mental health, addictions, and developmental services. So here at Community Living, and I was the program director at the Alliance Center. So a lot of people know me from my role there.
May I ask why you chose this path?
Well, good question, because I think I actually went into psychology because I wanted to figure myself out. I'd had a difficult, you know, childhood and growing up, and I went into caregiving partly as a way to figure out what was going on in my own life and sort myself out. And it just, you know, one thing led to another, and I got into management and, you know, supervising other therapists. Then I got into mediation work, and I've just been really happy with the career path that I took.
My sister actually is going through a similar thing in school. She's taking psychology more as kind of a look inward. I'm wondering, was there a moment where it started to become, okay, I know who I am. Now it's time for other people to feel the same?
Absolutely. And, you know, it took a while. It took a while to get there. And one of the things and the reason that I wrote the Conscious Caregiving Guide is because I went through my own burnout. So I was 30 years old at the time. My kids were small. My son was 5. My daughter was 1. And she was born with a medical condition that required us to go to Ottawa on a regular basis to see specialists. I was working full-time, finishing my master's, just all this stuff was going on. And my grandfather died suddenly of a heart attack. And my grandmother, who had Alzheimer's disease, came to live with us. And so, you know, there was already a lot of things going on in my life when, you know, overnight this caregiving role came about. And my family, my mom, my sister, my uncle, my aunt, they all live very far away. The closest person was 6 hours away. So I very much felt like this was on my shoulders. And so as I was going through all those, you know, challenges of becoming a caregiver on top of what was going on in my life. And, you know, don't get me wrong. I you know, I had a good job and I had resources and financially we were doing fine, but I was very stressed in all of these new obligations. And so as a therapist, you'd think by that time, because I'd been 7 years in my role, that I would know about self-care. But at that point in my career, I thought self-care was more about, you know, just taking more time to pamper myself or do healthy things. So when I initially realized I was on the road to burnout, my response to that was, you know, to eat more spinach and do yoga and go to the gym and make appointments for, you know, massage or hair.
So focus on the body more than mind.
Yeah, I was focusing on the body and just kind of trying to do things, but I was always stuck in the hamster wheel in my mind. So even though I was doing nice things for myself, it turned out to be just more obligations and more responsibilities and more appointments and more stuff to do in the same amount of time. So, you know, I just was never relaxed. And so I still encourage people to do nice things for themselves, but I've also realized that self-care is really about, you know, digging in deeper and putting ourselves first and meeting our own needs. Because I think that was my biggest challenge, is I didn't really know what taking care of myself mentally and emotionally really meant. And, you know, what it meant to put my own oxygen mask on before, you know, helping everybody else with theirs.
So when you talk about your book and self-care, when you discuss the term caregiver, are you more focused on caring for other people, yourself? Is it a balance of both?
It's really a balance of both. And so, you know, the book really takes the reader through all the challenges. Like, there's a lot of emotional challenges that come with caregiving, and, you know, the guilt and the obligation and the resentments, the fears, the worry, there's relationship challenges between not just the caregiver and the person receiving care, but, you know, when you're exhausting yourself with all these extra responsibilities, it affects all of your relationships. It affects the marriage when you get home and you have no energy. It affects your relationship with your kids, with your work. And for me personally, it was affecting every area of my life. And so throughout the book, I'm talking from the perspective of my own personal story, but also from all of the caregivers that I've talked to in my role as a counselor over the last 20 years, whether it be, you know, parents who are raising children with disabilities or autism or other special needs, if it's, you know, adult children who are caring for elderly parents or grandparents, it might be a spouse who's taking care of their, you know, husband or wife who's had an unexpected illness or an accident. So, you know, it's about how do you care for yourself throughout that and set yourself up so that you're healthy and well as you're going through this extra challenge that you didn't want or expect.
So in your own words, what is your goal with writing and publishing the book?
So my goal in writing and publishing The Conscious Caregiving Guide is to help caregivers have the best possible caregiving experience. It's to help them understand why they're taking on too much in the first place, why they're not setting themselves up in a way that they're taking care of themselves while going through this caregiving, because their caregiving situation, oftentimes, it's not a short-term thing. Like, this is often a long-term situation that can last years and years. And we can start out the caregiving role with, you know, the best of intentions and thinking, you know, I've got this. This, you know, I can handle this. And you probably can for a short term. But if you're not setting yourself up and asking for help, receiving help, really creating some good mental, emotional, and behavioral patterns in the long term, you know, you will burn out. And burnout is a very real risk for caregivers, not only professional caregivers, but all of the informal, unpaid caregivers, which, you know, statistically speaking, that's 8 million plus people in Canada, which is a quarter of the population who are providing some type of informal care, you know, and that can range anywhere from a high level of care, things like, you know, personal care, toileting, bathing, dressing, supervision, medication, coordinating health care, to something much lower, which could be something like driving to appointments or just helping with grocery shopping, things here and there. But like I said before, it's in addition to all whatever else is going on in that person's life.
Does caregiver also fall under the category of parenting, or is this kind of two separate ideals?
No, parenting does fall into that category, and parenting is a lot more challenging than most of us think when we're going into this. And so, you know, it can be parenting children and how to, you know, how to balance that out and how to match the expectations of what we thought it was going to be with what it actually is, because it is a big job and it is a big caregiving job. And then a lot of caregivers, actually a quarter of all informal unpaid caregivers, are both like in that sandwich generation where they're parenting and taking care of an elderly grandparent or parent. And back again to statistics, is that they're saying that or predicting that the number of seniors requiring care is set to double in the next 15 years. So as much as we don't think it's going to happen to us, you know, with cuts to health care and these increasing numbers of people needing care, we are very likely to need these types of resources and informations and strategies to get through these caregiving roles.
So with the perspective of myself, I'm 26. So if the statistics read true, then there's going to be plenty of caregiving that I may have to do myself. Is there any preparation?
Well, I wish, and the series that I'm writing is called the Wish I Knew series. And it's all the things I wish I knew when I went through these situations. So, you know, this book is on caregiving, or this series, because there's 5 books in the series. And my next one's on grief and loss. Then I've got books on aging, empty nesting. So it's all these different life transitions that are really difficult, and it's how to prepare. And I, you know, some people are like me and it just kind of, the bomb drops and it's just bam, overnight, you've got all these extra responsibilities. But I think for a lot of people, it's kind of like the frog in boiling water, you know, the experiments where you put a frog in a boiling pot.
Lukewarm water.
And then start heating it up gradually. And it's so gradual that the frog doesn't realize it's burning. And I think that's the situation for a lot of caregivers. It might just start with, you know, helping out, picking up medication, or it might be just a little here and there. And next thing you know, you're providing 10 hours of care, maybe more than that. And you start to have this feeling of exhaustion where, you know, you go to bed at night and you wake up in the morning just as tired after a good night's sleep. Your batteries aren't recharging and you kind of feel like you're in a sinking boat. And the book is really about, you know, if your boat's leaking, plug that leak before starting to bail, because no matter how hard you bail, if you don't plug that leak, you're just going to go down. So, you know, it's a lot about self-care and how to communicate. You know, there's a chapter on really how to communicate those challenges and needs with, you know, whether it be your siblings who maybe aren't contributing as much as you are. Maybe it's with the person you're providing care to. You know, it can be all these different kind of, you know, emotional and communication and relationship challenge that really, when I was going through that experience, nobody was talking about it. And how do you set up and prepare? Because back to that question of, you know, will people pick up this book before they're in a caregiving situation? Probably not. But there's so much information on how to set yourself up in the first place where you're creating a caregiving community so that the burden's not all on your shoulders. Because what happens oftentimes is the dynamics get created and then everybody expects it from you. And it's hard to unravel from that once you're already in it. And also the whole backstory on why we take on too much in the first place and why we set ourselves up to, I'll say, overcare or maybe do everything ourselves is a really important piece. And that's the conscious part of it, is really looking at why are you setting yourself up in a way that doesn't work for you long term, maybe in your caregiving role, but maybe this is going on in other situations in your life. And, you know, for me personally, I wanted to be the family hero. You know, I had the story that I was the black sheep. I was, you know, the family screw up, and I didn't want to disappoint my family. I didn't want to look weak or incapable or incompetent. So even when people asked me for help, I'd be, you know, oh, I'm busy, but I'm good. I got it. And really I wasn't.
So to kind of sum up, the two things that you could probably prepare for are self-reflection and communication.
Self-reflection, communication, for sure, and looking at just emotional patterns. Like, what are your mental and emotional patterns that, you know, run through a loop in your life?
So like in your case, it would be the black sheep mentality.
Fear of failure, yeah, the fear of not being good enough. And so wanting to put my cape on and be the family hero and save the day. And, you know, and resentment was building up in me because I was getting phone calls from my family who were far away saying, you know, can you check this? Can you do that? Oh, it looks like, you know, and giving me all these chores and my or extra tasks to care for my grandmother and here I am imagining them, you know, relaxing on their sofas, just kind of throwing more chores at me or more duties at me. And I was getting very resentful about that. And I wasn't talking about it. And by the time I did talk about it, I was already burning out. I was already exhausted.
The batteries were already out.
Already out, yes. And so when I did come clean with my family and talked about what was going on, they, you know, they were challenged with caring from a distance. You know, they were trying to show their concern and support me in ways that weren't working for me, but they didn't know that. And so when we talked about it, everyone stepped up. You know, my mom became the, she actually moved back to Sturgeon from BC, and she took over, you know, the power of attorney for personal care. And my uncle stepped up on the financial side, and my aunt did what she could from, you know, Whitehorse. And it just, you know, I wasn't really communicating what I needed, and there were reasons for that. So the book really is about getting, not only becoming a more conscious caregiver, but a more conscious human being on all levels, like mentally and emotionally. And I think a lot of people have mental, emotional patterns that really aren't working for them in many areas of their lives.
Talking about the book, while I was reading through it, I noticed it kind of read like a textbook in a way. Was that your intention?
So my intention was to have really bite-sized pieces. So my chapters are broken up in small sections with practical exercises. So I wanted it to be very practical with strategies that people can, you know, read one little section, take those strategies, reflect on those questions, and really make some changes in their lives. Because I think a lot of times we caregivers feel that, oh, I just need a 2-week vacation, or I need something big to change. But it's really in the small habits and the small shifts that we make on a daily basis. And I often tell people, you know, you only have so many energy bubbles in a day. And if you're out at 9 a.m., you're in trouble. So we got to learn to protect and manage those energy bubbles. So when you're caregiving and you're already overwhelmed, picking up a 500-page book is often too much. So I do a lot of little storytelling. You know, there's little clips of real life stories, and then every section's got a practical exercise, a reflective question, something that you can take away as a concrete thing that you can implement in your life.
Yeah, one of the ones that kind of struck out to me, I have the book in my hand as kind of a cheating guide, was the caregiver communication, how you put some exercises at the end, not necessarily like write a book report or an assignment along that, but more of like just questions you can ask yourself. Perfect example, you were going through the story about your children and how you felt a little distant from them. And mm-hmm. then one of the questions that was asked, not really are you to blame, but are you a factor in this distance? So is the idea to just get people to ask the questions that they hadn't thought of before, or is it just more of that self-reflection?
It's part of the question is part of teaching people new skills and new tools and new habits to, you know, not only communicate and care for themselves, but, you know, sticking with the whole communication idea is that a lot of times we're trying to tell the other person what we need, but in a way that they can't hear us. And so we really never get our needs met. So these communication strategies, whether you're a caregiver or not, they will help people actually give their message in a way that they're heard. Because, you know, I talk about one communication strategy, for example, is the I statement. And in anyone that's in psychology knows about the I statement, as a counselor, we're taught that, which is saying, you know, starting your sentence with I and not making it about you. So it's taking responsibility instead of blaming the person. Because as soon as you start a sentence with you're doing or you're making me feel, then the person gets on the defensive and shuts down their hearing. So it's a lot about how do you communicate in a way that's keeping that person's listening open, and that you're not talking from your own already listening. I call it the already listening. And it's like from the story that you've made up. It's from the meaning you've attached to something. So if you tell someone, well, I've observed this, and it's something just that you've objectively observed, and this is the story I'm making up about this. This is how I'm perceiving it. This is how I'm seeing it. And this is the emotions it brings up for me. And what I need to really be connected to you is for us to work on this together. And in caregiving situations, I think we're very much looking at changing somebody else, whether that be the care recipient or whether it be, you know, our husband that's not supporting her enough or the brother that's not around or whatever that is. And the way we communicate that creates more disconnection in the relationship versus getting those needs met.
Another thing that I really liked about your book was around the end, you have these appendixes, which I've never actually understood what that meant. There's one of them that I really like. It's called the care group, where you have like assigned roles for people, kind of help categorize how you as a group can be the caregiver alliance, I guess. And I'm wondering if you could define aspects for me.
So in the the care plan template is really a template to look at, you know, who could be part of this caregiving community and this caregiving team that you can set up. So who's showing concern? Who's asking if you need help? Who's checking in on you? And getting these people that you know and trust who seem to want to, you know, take part in helping you out and really looking at who could do what. And when you look at, you know, I was working with a lady who had several siblings and they really had a good, you know, kind of where I first really saw this working well in practice, where, you know, her sister really liked cooking and meal preparation and she would do all that grocery shopping, anything to do with food. And she was a nurse. And so she'd do all the medication and do all the medical appointments. And, you know, everyone had their roles and everyone knew what they had to do. And they would take on an exchange of who's going to be the primary caregiver so that it's not all on one person all of the time. And they just had a really nice setup. And I working in the healthcare field, I've seen many care plans, but this one was one where I was, you know, I would hear about it all the time and think like, that is genius. That's smart. And if people would set themselves up in a way where all the responsibility is not on them and all, not even just all the responsibility, but all the worry, because sometimes you're just kind of, you know, stuck in this fear of what might happen and, you know, what you're going to do if this and if that. And if you can,
especially if it's all on you.
Yeah, exactly. And if you can disconnect at times from that, knowing that, you know, your sister, your friend, or, you know, someone else is taking on that role on a regular basis, or you're rotating it so that everything's not on one person, you know, it's going to be a much better long-term situation for, you know, the primary caregiver or everyone involved in that caregiving situation.
It diffuses that burnout.
It does. It really does.
And that's what I'd like to talk about, because I don't think we actually properly defined burnout, you know, depleted batteries and
yeah,
whatnot. But you have a whole section dedicated to burnout. So please define it for everybody.
Yeah. So caregiver burnout is a state of mental, emotional, and physical exhaustion that's caused by the act of caregiving over a prolonged period of time. So, you know, I have in the Conscious Caregiving Guide, in the appendix section that you were just talking about, there's a complete self-assessment quiz to see where you're at in terms of your stress level. But I often tell people just like a few quick and easy ways to know if you're either burnt out or heading down that road is to, well, the first thing is if you're questioning whether you're burning out, you probably are or heading down that road. Otherwise, you wouldn't even be asking the question. And the second thing, and this is a really big one, is if you have people that love and care about you telling you that you need to slow down, you need to take a break, you need to maybe talk to someone or take better care of yourself, trust them, because they can see more objectively than you can. And the other part that I was mentioning before around, you know, you only have so many energy bubbles. If you're waking up in the morning feeling like, oh God, this is another day that I have to get through, and you have no energy right off the bat or very early on, and you're pounding back coffee just to kind of get enough energy to get through your, you know, your first morning meeting, and you're flopping into bed at night totally exhausted after, you know, really not feeling like you got anything for yourself, you are probably at very high risk of burnout and need to look at what kind of positive changes you can make immediately to even just like small habits And the Conscious Caregiving Guide is full of those concrete strategies to help people reset their lives and figure things out.
You're talking about the self-reflection again. I'm wondering, if can people recognize signs of burnout?
So when I was going through my burnout, I thought I was hiding it pretty well. I was putting my little happy face on, going to work and, you know, doing what I had to do. And one day my boss called me in and said, you know, I've noticed that you look very stressed out and you're irritable and racing everywhere. What's going on? And it was like a slap in the face to me to not only realize that I was burning out, because I think I knew but didn't want to admit it to myself, but that other people were seeing it. And so if you're lucky enough to have someone that will point it out to you, again, you know, trust them. And one of the first things that I tell people to do if they think that they're burning out or they're hearing this from their loved ones is to go talk to someone who's completely outside of your caregiving situation. And that can be a counselor or a coach if you can do that. And if not, a friend, or what I call an accountability partner. So someone that you'll talk to on a regular basis. It can just be once a week for coffee, but they're gonna challenge you, motivate you, and hold you accountable to your own self-care goals and to really doing what you need to do mentally, emotionally, spiritually, physically, socially, whatever, in whatever areas of your life, to look at how to truly take care of yourself at a profound level so you can stay healthy and well.
I just have a few more questions for you. I wanted to know, is this your first book?
So this is the first book in the Wish I Knew series, and the next one's coming out in March, and that's on grief, and then in June on stress.
Are these therapeutic for yourself? Is that one of your motivators for putting the pen to paper?
All of my books have been from personal experience mixed in with my professional experiences. And when I wrote the Conscious Caregiving Guide, my caregiving experience ended almost a decade ago. And I thought I'd processed it all. And I was, you know, sharing my experiences just because of, you know, everywhere I look here, right here in Sturgeon Falls and in the surrounding areas, it is friends and family members and clients who are taking on these caregiving roles. So I felt like I really have something to share here about caregiving that can help people have a better experience so that they can avoid the mistakes that I made and deal with these real challenges. But when I started writing that book, it was very cathartic for me. There was a lot of pieces that I thought were all packed up and cleaned up. And, you know, there were times where I was writing and it brought up a bunch of emotions. And sometimes I'd call my aunt or call my sister or my mom and have a conversation with them about it and just process it at a deeper level. And the same with the grief book. I thought, you know, I'm not grieving. And I realized that, you know, maybe I do have a little suitcase that I'm carrying around with some grief from all the losses that I've experienced in my life. And yeah, so all of my experiences have been very, very healing.
And this one's just kind of for me. The quotes at the beginning of each chapter are perfect. When I read them and then I continued, I've only read the first two. Unfortunately, I didn't make too much time for myself, but so far they've been the perfect tone setter for where I was about to continue the story. I'm wondering where those came from. Are those stuff you've lived off your life, the quotes you remember, or were you actively searching them out?
So when I went through my burnout and my recovery, so my recovery took almost 2 years. And in that time, I really went on a huge soul searching mission. I mean, I did counseling. I read all the self-help books you can imagine. I traveled to Peru and did ayahuasca. I did hypnosis, past life regression, anything that I could get my hands on to really dig up, because I was realizing that a lot of my burnout didn't just come from caregiving or what was in front of me. It was coming from stuff from behind me. It was from stuff in my past, and I needed to pull it up and clear it out because it was taking a lot of energy to keep suppressing all that stuff. And so I came across so many resources that helped me during that time. And some of those quotes really stuck out for me. And I just kept a quotes book. And so I go in that quotes book, and when I'm looking for a quote, somehow, some way, I just open it up, and within 30 seconds, there's a quote, and it's the perfect one that I need.
Wonderful. Well, I guess the last thing we'll wrap up is, How can people find the book?
So the book is available at Amazon.ca, IndigoChapters.ca. It's in most local bookstores and bookstores, chapters in the area, but I hear it's selling out, so maybe online might be the best bet for now. But I also have copies for people that know me. They can contact me directly through my website, which is LiseLeBlanc.ca, or on Facebook.
Wonderful. Thank you so much for taking time to chat with us today.
Thanks for having me, Drew. It was great.